Louise, where are your parents from?
I'll have to get that. They're from near Canton, south of Canton, Sundok Province.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Gunjuk Sundok Province.
Uh-huh. And when did they come to the United States?
Well, my father came first. I don't know exactly when it was. It was about maybe 1898 or something like that. He came first. It might have even been later than that. He came first to learn the herb business from, you see, I don't know these family connections either, whether this was his uncle. I think it was his uncle, Tom Fuyen. It may say in that herb book what the connection was. But he came because in order to help with the herb business. And he stayed here for a couple of years, I think, learning. And then he went back, and he brought my mother back here. I think it was 1902 that they came here.
Mm-hmm. So they were married in China.
Oh yes, they were married in China.
Mm-hmm.
And
arranged marriage?
Oh yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My mother was born. She was quite in a wealthy family, and she used to tell me about how she lived in this big house with all her women relatives, and she used to embroider, and she had her own little maid. I forget what she called it, a boom room or something like that. She had a maid who would fan her and bring her tea and look after her, and this little maid was about her own age. But she used to talk about those days in China before she was married. Oh, they, with such nostalgia, that was the golden, those were the best years of her life, the way she talked, you know.
How did
she used to say, I used to tan, you know, what I mean, old tan, you know. Like luxury. I lived in luxury because I didn't have to do any work, and I had the servants, and I had all my relatives around me.
Mm-hmm.
And then but she knew that she would have to get married someday, because all girls got married in those days, you know. Eventually you got married, and someone arranged for your marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but she didn't want to get married, she said, but she knew she'd have to. So she was told one day that she was going to, someone had been chosen for her. And I think she caught a glimpse of him. He came to their house. I think she said she caught a glimpse of him. But she didn't dare, naturally. There was no contact or anything. My father's home was across the river. And they had once been quite influential and wealthy too, but they'd lost their money, as I understand, as my mother told me. They didn't have that much money, but he was regarded as a very brilliant young man who would be a good match for my mother,
mm-hmm.
even though he was not as wealthy as she was. So he was picked for her because he was a very brilliant young man. They thought he had a good future before him. But at the time their marriage was supposed to take place, both his parents died, one after another. And so that their marriage had to be postponed for I don't know how many years, I think three or four, for the mourning period. I forget now how many, I've got it down someplace, I should look that up. But it's for several, 3 or 4 years, and she felt like that was a reprieve, you know, she didn't stay home that much longer. So that actually she was about, I don't know how old she was when she was married, but she was older than most girls are,
mm-hmm.
you know, because of the deaths in the family.
Mm-hmm.
But
she
told about how she finally, the wedding day came, and her muijie, that's what she called her, muijie, dressed her up in this red, you know, wedding gown. She was crying, she said, her child, she cried until her eyes are red.
Was she crying because she was rebelling against the arrangement?
No, she wasn't rebelling. She didn't even think of rebelling. We asked her, why did you do it if you didn't want to get married? Well, what else was there to do? Girls always got married. That was your fate. But she was crying because she had to leave her home, and she thought she would never see her family again. And she was really sad about that, you know. But she had no idea of rebelling. She never once did she say, well, I'm not going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just aghast at this, you know. Why would you even marry somebody you never knew and never even saw? But she said, that's it, that's your fate. So they had to cross the river, and she rode in the red sedan chair.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the regular Chinese ceremony. She went to her husband's home with a strange man she never knew.
Mm-hmm.
And however, their marriage turned out to be quite a good marriage, much more harmonious than most marriages I know of.
Uh-huh.
Love marriages, you know, and my father is quite a nice, good-looking man at that time, real young. I have some pictures of them when they were
mm-hmm.
quite, you know, when they were first married. And my mother was tiny, she was like a doll, and my father's quite good-looking. And so they got along quite well.
Mm-hmm.
She never went into any details about anything, but they seemed to, I know that at home, we never heard them quarrel very often, maybe once in a while, but very infrequently.
Mm-hmm.
And my father was always so solicitous of her and all, brought her presents, you know. He was really not exactly a typical Chinese husband in that way. He would bring her, you know, give her furs and jewelry and perfume. He always wanted her to have the best perfume.
Do you know how much education your parents had?
Well, my mother was taught to read and write, which was unusual at that time, because she had a tutor. Her father believed in education for girls, which was not usual
mm-hmm.
in those days.
Mm-hmm.
So she and my father had a good education. He went to Conway School in Canton when he was 16, and his calligraphy is just beautiful. He became
mm-hmm.
he was actually I have some of his calligraphy, and it's just it's just remarkable. In fact, he had a reputation along the west coast here, you know, as being the Chinese who was most renowned for his calligraphy.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a scholar too. He was reading all the time. So did my mother. She read a lot. And she read, they always took the Chinese newspapers. And they always constantly reading. My mother liked to read novels. But I guess my mother, I would say that they had more education than most Chinese at that time.
Did your father finish what would be considered high school?
Yes, I'm sure he did. He took the examinations. He was going to take the examination. I forget. I think he took the examinations. You know, they had those examinations.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I think he took those examinations.
Mm-hmm.
But he was very scholarly. He was he read a lot, and he wrote. And he was constantly writing to, you know, just practicing his calligraphy. He used to help us to. That's the one thing I do know, the strokes and, you know, the sequence of the strokes when you write. That's the only thing I remember about writing.
Mm. Your father was a student of Kanyue?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Did he ever tell you about that?
Well, that's
your mother?
No, he never did. We just knew that he had a famous teacher, but he never mentioned it to us. But we just knew about this from my. And then when I went to when I spoke to my mother, I was taking notes to, you know, about my family.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I heard about it.
You mentioned that your mother came from a wealthy family. Do you know what kind of wealth and how they acquired?
Well, let me see now. The father, I have it all down someplace in that one of those. Oh, no, maybe I didn't put it in there. It's in someplace, I've got it in my notes someplace, but her father, or either her father or grandfather, was a importer of shark skins.
Mm-hmm.
And, exporter. Exporter.
Right.
Of shark skins. And that was her father. And then let me see. Grandfather was also, but I can't remember now. I have such a poor memory, but I have that all down. I should have brought that with me.
Mm-hmm.
But it's in that, it's also in my daughter's thesis.
Mm-hmm. What about your father's family as well? You know anything about that?
Well, they were, I believe they were, he was a, they were prominent officials at one time, I believe. But they lost their money somehow. But I know so little about my father's family that I never talked to him about it. Never had a chance to ask him any questions. And my mother didn't seem to know too much about his family. We asked her,
mm-hmm.
and she didn't seem to know too much about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I've just practically I have no knowledge of much of anything about my father's life in China at all.
How about his studying herbs and so forth?
Well, I believe he studied herbs over here with my, with his uncle. That's where he was asked to come here to help out. And he was very adventurous. And so he was happy to come to America. He wanted to see what America was like. And then he learned some of the herb business and he went back to get my mother.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1902 they came here, and they had no plans to stay here. They were just going to, at least my mother's thought, that they were just going to be here for a while, make some money, and then go back home,
mm-hmm.
go back to China. Because I'm sure she probably would never have wanted to leave her home and family and never come back to China, which is what happened.
Mm-hmm. Here, meaning Los Angeles?
In Los Angeles, yes, because that's where they came from China. Of course, I suppose they stopped in San Francisco a while, but they came to Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And at 9th and Olive Street, that's where the herb company was.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother, she spoke about the long journey across the ocean. I think it took about a month, I think. And she stayed in her stateroom the whole time, because almost the whole time, because she didn't, well, she had bound feet in the first place, partly bound feet. Her feet were bound when she was, I don't know how old she was, but they weren't, they didn't continue with the process. I think when they completely bound, it was very tiny, but her feet were about this long. We never did see her feet, because she didn't allow anyone to look at her feet. She was ashamed of the fact that she had bound.
She had them covered up?
Well, she used to keep them bandages around, and then she wore white socks over them, white socks. And she never let anyone see her feet. We never saw her feet.
She was ashamed of it, do you think?
She was ashamed of it. She was ashamed of having bound feet. She wouldn't even like me telling about it now, I'm sure.
Mm.
She was really ashamed of it. But she stayed in her stateroom for almost the whole journey. And my father would bring her meals to her, or she would have her meals brought to her in the stateroom, and she didn't like the American food.
Mm-hmm.
She was miserable. She was just miserable on that trip, the way she sounded, you know, and homesick.
Mm-hmm.
Poor thing. In fact, she was homesick for a long, long time. She used to talk with such stuff. Even when we were grown, you know, she would tell us about those wonderful days in her girlhood home. When she was feeling depressed, she'd talk about that, you know.
About how old were your parents when they came to the
States?
Well,
they were in their early 20s. I think they were about mid-20s. About 24, 25, because
mm-hmm.
they weren't married until on account of the long delay in their marriage. They weren't married until I think maybe she was 22 or one or something like that before she was married. And then they didn't come immediately. But when she came over, when they came over here and they settled at 9th and Olive Street, and my father was helping in the herb business. And this,
what was the name of the your uncle's herb business?
It was the Fu Yuen Herb Company, FOOYUEN.
Was that in Chinatown?
No, it was at 9th and Olive.
At 9th and
Olive. Right where we lived.
Uh-huh.
The house where we lived was also the office. So that's why we, that's one reason I blame the fact that I can't speak Chinese, because we were surrounded all the time by the secretary. They had a secretary or office girl, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we, and all these patients coming in. And we, 9th and Olive was a, at that time was just a residential street. Now it's in downtown Los Angeles. And it was a big Victorian house, I remember. It seemed to me huge. Because I was, when I was a child, it seemed there were all kinds of wonderful places for us to play. You know, little closets. And there was a big backyard and a couple of, was a house in the back where my father, where some student, a student always lived there. There were different students. My father was very generous because he, and he liked to have the students from China come here. And he would practically support them. There were several students that he helped through college. And they would live in this little house in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was another place, another building in the back where they kept the herbs. It was a really, quite a big backyard.
Mm-hmm. How many people worked in this food and herb
company?
Well,
it was just my father and his uncle, and then the druggist and the office girl.
Mm-hmm.
And the patients would come, and they had a good business. That's the reason why my uncle needed help from my father. And they, I remember there was a big pot-belly stove in the front room. It was before they had electrical appliances. I think there was even gas lights, you know. We didn't have electricity then. It was very early. And we used, I remember on very cold days, they, the patients would all be sitting around this gas stove, this wood stove in the front room. And they would take their herbs, that they would, the herbs would be cooked for them in the kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
The herbalists would make up the herbs after they had seen the, my father or his uncle. They did, upstairs was the office,
mm-hmm.
and my father would, they would sit on one side of the desk, and the patient would sit on the other side of the desk, and there was a glass partition between, and a place where they could put their hands through to feel the pulse.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way they determined what medicines to give. And of course, the patient would give a history of whatever was wrong.
What did your father do?
Well, that's what he did. He would feel
the
pulse and ask the questions and prescribe. He'd write down in Chinese on Dan, they call that a Dan.
Mm-hmm.
The prescription or whatever, what kind of herbs to give this patient. And then this Don would go to the druggist, and the druggist would pick the herbs, would choose the herbs that were on the Don and make them up into either a package for the patients to take home, or they would boil them right there, and the patient would take them, drink the tea right there with raisins, to, because it was really bitter, you know. If you've ever taken Chinese herbs, it's quite bitter.
Mm-hmm.
So ever since, I've never liked raisins because of the association between herbs and raisins.
So naturally, your family used herbs.
Oh yes, I never went to none of us ever went to a Western doctor. I never went to one until I had my first child. We were always dosed with Chinese herbs, and it always seemed to help us, you know, cured us. We of course we weren't sick very much. I don't remember very much illness. But we were 8 children too. But any time we got the flu or cold or anything, my father would give us herbs, prescribe some herbs for us. I just hated to take it. My mother would. I'd hold my nose, take a big gulp of it. But I didn't take raisins. I don't know what I did. I just didn't remember. But that's what we were brought up on, the Chinese herbs.
Mm-hmm.
We never went to the Chinese doctor.
Mm-hmm. You didn't rebel at all? Or?
Oh, well, we didn't know any better. We didn't want to go to the doctor anyway, so
mm-hmm.
as long as the herbs
mm-hmm.
were effective, you know, they seemed to help us.
Mm-hmm.
But of course the herb business at that time was, well, it was actually illegal. They considered it illegal here because it was, the AMA, the American Medical Association, were very much against herbalists. You know, they considered that the Chinese were practicing medicine without a license, they called it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think my father must have been arrested over 100 times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'd come, they'd send stool pigeons to the, and people who would pretend to be patients and who were actually undercover police.
Well, would these be Caucasians?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. All his patients were Caucasian.
All his patients
yeah,
were?
Yeah, they were not Chinese. Of course, you could, I don't remember any Chinese patients. I guess the Chinese patients would just go to Chinatown and get herbs, because they had herb stores in Chinatown, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't have to go to an herbalist, they just go to an herb store and get herbs. I don't remember my father having any Chinese patients at all, but he was a very prosperous and successful herbalist.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a lot of patients, even in Canada. He used to have mail order patients in Canada. And then he had an office in San Diego. And then I think in San Bernardino, he had some branch offices. I remember the one in San Diego because he took us there when we were very young. We went to visit it.
Mm-hmm.
But he seemed to inspire confidence in the patients because he was looked nice looking, always dressed impeccably. My father was, he would get, even in those days, he would spend $200 for a suit, you know. And that was quite a lot in those days. And his suits were custom made. And he always wore this pearl stick pin, big pearls.
Mm-hmm.
And pearl stick pin and tie. And the white shirts. And he never, I don't remember ever wearing anything, you know, he was always in a suit. I don't remember ever seeing him in casual clothes. Except when he played tennis.
Mm-hmm.
He tried to play tennis
mm-hmm.
too.
Mm-hmm.
He tried everything. He tried to play tennis and then he'd wear the white tennis clothes. You know, he always got the outfit that went with
yeah.
him. So, but that was the only time I ever saw him in casual clothes because he was always in a suit. He didn't
mm-hmm.
go around the house, you know, sloppy looking ever, even when he wasn't working. And even when the office wasn't open on Sundays when he didn't work, he was still
mm-hmm.
always dressed in a suit. And he made a lot of friends, you know. He had a lot of patients who were very loyal to him. All these testimonials that we've seen in that booklet.
Mm-hmm.
And they would keep coming back. Anytime they were sick, they'd come back to him, you know. And so that he did very well.
Do you know of any cases of complaints, you know, which would be similar to malpractice
No. The only complaints were these arrests, you know, with the police coming.
What would happen there? What would happen?
Well, what would happen was my father had a very good lawyer. I forget his name. I think it was Mr. Wei.
A Chinese lawyer?
No. American. American lawyer. And as soon as the police would come and take my father away, they would arrest him and take him to the police station. One time they brought a paddy wagon, and I was so ashamed that I was so afraid that someone would, you know, it would be in the paper that my father was taken away. I was in school then, I was just a kid in school. And yet at the same time, I was just infuriated at the police. They would come and they were just, you know, regular cops. They would come in and go through the house. One time they took my father and mother's water pipes, you know, Syrian, you know, that those water pipes that they used to smoke long ago, you've seen them?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, my mother had one, my father, they used to smoke water pipes regularly. And they came and took those and just took them, just for souvenirs, I guess. They'd go through the house and just take whatever they wanted. I was just furious, even as a child, that they would do such a thing. But my father then had, as I say, had this lawyer named Mr. Way. And as soon as he was arrested, why, the office girl would call Mr. Way, and Mr. Way would get him bailed out of jail right away immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd be the charge would be practicing medicine without a license, using the name doctor, you
mm-hmm.
know. So he was calling himself Dr. Leung.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. I don't know what happened to my uncle at that time, because I don't remember that he was ever involved in these arrests. But I think he, after a while, after my father took over the business, he moved out and got another, went someplace else, but I forget now where he went. Although in the first years he was there when I was very small.
Mm-hmm.
I remember him and his wife
mm-hmm.
living there too. They lived there and my father and mother, and you know, just my sister. My sister was born just a few months after my mother arrived there. She was pregnant too on the boat. That was
mm-hmm.
another thing that made it pretty sick. So, but my sister was born a few months after that. And then I was born in 1905. My sister was born in 1902, and I was born in 1905.
So all the children were born in the
States? Yes, all the children were born in the United States. Although my mother had one child, one son in China. He died when he was 18 months old. And the way my mother would talk about that child, he was a genius, you know. They always, the one that dies, oh, he could talk when he was 6 months old, and he could, you know,
mm-hmm.
he could write when he was just a genius.
Mm-hmm.
But when he died, it was very sudden. He was stricken suddenly ill, my mother said. He just got a fever. And he was just gone in no time at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my father was over here at that time. I think he was still in this country learning the herb business at that time. So actually she had 9 children. I was
mm-hmm.
8. There was an older brother of mine, this paragon.
How many brothers and sisters?
Well, there were 5 brothers, not counting the one that died, 5 brothers and 3 girls, 3 sisters.
Mm-hmm. Did your mother have any help taking care of the children?
Oh, yes, she did. We had, always she had nursemaids. She had, she didn't wash the diapers or anything of that sort, but she fed us, you know. She'd feed the children. We all were brought up on, what do you call that, milk. Condensed milk.
Mm-hmm.
Condensed milk.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd make that up in bottles. I don't think she sterilized the bottles, but they didn't do that at that time. But she would do that part, you know. She'd make up the food, make up the milk. But we always had someone to do the diapers and take care of the little ones.
Was this a live-in help or?
No, not live-in help. No, none of them. The first, there was a white woman named Elva Booker.
Mm-hmm.
Booker, she was our first one to take care of Lily. That's
mm-hmm.
what Lily's name is, Lily Elva.
Mm-hmm.
She was named after this nurse.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how, remember now how long she stayed with us. And then after she left, then we got some Negro gals that came. And, oh, some stayed quite a while, and some, you know, it was a turnover. But I remember Addie, and I remember Mary. Well, Mary was one that we had for a long time. In fact, he kept in touch with us up until my sister died, and before my sister died, I guess. We are still in touch with old Mary. She used to talk and come over, and once I think she came over and had Thanksgiving with us.
Mm.
But my mother never, she didn't cook even, because we had a Chinese cook at first. Guy Suk, I remember him.
Mm-hmm.
9th and Olive Street.
Mm-hmm.
He did the cooking, Chinese food, of course. And we had two dining rooms, one for Chinese, well, I mean, one for the men and one for the women at that
for
time.
For the family?
Yeah, for our family. Yeah. It was really Chinese style. See, the men would sit in one dining room, the women and the children in another dining room. Guy Suk would do the cooking, and the kitchen was, he had a great big wok, and he liked to cook with a wood stove.
Mm-hmm.
He cooked with a wood stove. But he stayed with us for a long time. He even came to with us to Pico Street when we moved to Pico Street, which was about, I don't know, 1913 or something like that. I think he went to Pico Street. And he came there. And he used to go to Chinatown every day to buy the food.
Mm-hmm.
And when we moved to Pico Street, I can still see him taking a big straw basket. He wore Chinese clothes and Chinese shoes. Get on the Pico car and ride down. All you had to do was go straight to Chinatown on the Pico car.
Mm. Do you remember how much house cooks were paid?
Oh, I have no idea. I have no idea what they paid him. But he got enough so that he saved enough so that he could go back to China finally to die. He wasn't that old that I remember, but after he stayed with us in Pico for 2 or 3 years, he decided he wanted to go back to China.
Was he a live-in cook?
No, no. He used to. I don't know where he lived in Chinatown, but he. Even in the 9th and Olive, he didn't live there. He lived in Chinatown someplace.
Mm-hmm.
But Guy Suk was, he used to, I remember when he made our lunches once, when we first started going to school and made our lunches, he cut the bread so thick, we were ashamed to eat the sandwiches. So, after that, my sister and I made our own lunches.
Uh-huh.
But my parents were really sad when he left, because they couldn't find another Chinese cook. I was glad, because I never liked Chinese food. I was really a bad child, I think.
Did the kids rebel against eating Chinese food?
I was the only one. I just didn't care for Chinese food, and I'd pour tea into my rice and put sugar in it. And my mother was just horrified. She said that would make me very sick. She thought that was unhealthy. But I would have temper tantrums. I was really a bad. I was not like my sister. I was really a good child, but I was the opposite.
What did you prefer to eat?
I wanted American food. I loved American food. And there was a little delicatessen at the corner at 9th and Olive Street. And they used to serve these mashed potatoes. I still remember the mashed potatoes. You could get them for 5 cents in a little wooden plate. And I'd have a temper tantrum, and I'd demand from my mother to give me 5 cents so I could go to the corner and get them. Mashed potatoes, and that's what I would do a lot of times.
So your mother did give in?
Yes, she spoiled me, you know. My father, he didn't take much hand in disciplining me either, but I can still remember getting on the floor and just kicking, you know, if I didn't get my way. And one time I was carried upstairs by one of the students that was living with us, lived in the back. Carried upstairs and put in my room, you know. Shut the door, and my mother said, "Oh, you can't come out until you can behave." I was so stubborn. I stayed in there for hours and hours. I think I stayed in there the whole day until they finally came and took me out. But I would not. I was so stubborn. I wouldn't. wouldn't give in, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I was the only one that didn't like the Chinese food. I don't remember anyone else. But, and we used to have wonderful food. When I think of the food that we had and that I refused to eat, I just mm-hmm. now I love Chinese food, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Mm-hmm.
And I, but then after Guy Suk left and we were, well, I'm skipping all around.
That's okay.
Well, we were at Pico then,
mm-hmm.
and they tried without any success to get another Chinese cook. So they finally got this Negro woman to cook for us. Her name was Beatty. And oh, I was in seventh heaven. She was a Southern cook, and she could
made.
Cook. Well, she came from the South,
mm-hmm.
and she was a wonderful cook.
Mm-hmm.
Even my mother and liked the food, her American food. My mother did not care for American food. But I remember the first breakfast that she served us, and we were in the breakfast room. We had a nice breakfast room where we had breakfast, and she had cantaloupe, you know, cut fancy with it, and I thought that was just great, the way she cut that cantaloupe, and biscuits, really big, hot, fluffy biscuits. My mother ate one whole biscuit, which was unusual for her to even eat that much Chinese American food. And then her sand dab, she could make wonderful sand dabs that my dad liked. And her strawberry shortcake, oh,
mm.
was out of this world.
Mm.
And then she, what else was it? She cooked some sponge bread, even my mother liked it. We tried and tried to get the recipe from her, but she would go into the pantry and shut the door and not let anyone see her cook these things, because she didn't want anyone to know her recipes.
What?
Because she just doesn't want anyone to know. And the office girls, they wanted to find out how she made her strawberry shortcake, especially.
Why do you think you loved American food so much and hated Chinese food?
Well, I don't know. I think it was just rebellion against, I don't know. I think I was, at that time, I think I wanted to be American. I didn't want to be different. I think that's the reason. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to be like everybody else.
Mm-hmm. How about the schools that you attended? Were they mostly?
Oh, they were all Caucasian.
All Caucasians?
Yeah, there were no Chinese too. We were the only. We first went to Grand Avenue School,
mm-hmm.
near Ninth and Olive,
mm-hmm.
at the Grand Avenue School, and they, I remember Lily, she was my older sister, she taking me to kindergarten the first day, and leaving me there, and oh, I felt just, you know, all alone and deserted. But we stayed there. Well, we went to school there until we moved to Pico, and then we went to 10th Street School.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, by that time, there were other kids, two other children. But in school, well, I got along well with the, got along pretty well with the other children.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until junior high school, I guess. Well, you don't want to talk about this.
You can give me all your schools, all the places where you attended.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we went to Grand Avenue School. Then we went to 10th Street School. That was when we went to Pico. And then I went to Centus Junior High School.
Mm-hmm.
Then to Los Angeles High School. Then to USC.
Mm-hmm. What did you study at USC?
I took a liberal arts course, and I majored in journalism and English.
Mm-hmm. When did you graduate from USC?
1926.
Mm-hmm. Did you move to after Pico?
No, that was our last family home together, because after my father died, he left no insurance or anything, and we really had a hard time. He didn't leave an insurance. I remember one time he got, you know, he got these ads in the mail, buy a life insurance and so forth, and he made me write a letter back. He said, I don't want anything about death. I don't want to be reminded about death. So he made no insurance. And he had been sick for a couple of years before he died, so there was really no money.
When did he die?
In 1931.
Mm-hmm.
I was in Chicago by that time.
Mm-hmm. What were you doing in
I was
Chicago?
a reporter on the Chicago Times.
Mm-hmm. Was that your first job after
oh, no,
graduating?
Oh no, my first job was in Los Angeles, and after I graduated in 26, I got a job on the record in Los Angeles Record.
Mm-hmm. I understand you were the first Chinese American
woman
reporter.
Well, on a big daily. You know, there have been others, I think, that, you know, were on smaller papers, but I was the first one on a big city daily.
Did you have a hard time getting the job? How did you go about
Well, it was really strange how I got the job. It was by fluke. You know, when I graduated, I thought, I had no idea that I'd be able to get a job as a reporter. Because, in the first place, there were very few women reporters at all.
Mm-hmm.
The second place, being Chinese, I didn't think I'd have a chance, but I knew I had to get some kind of a job. But I thought, oh, my parents have spent all this money on my education, I've got to do something. So I went out immediately, the day after graduation. And I didn't know exactly what I was going to do, but I thought, I will try, I'll go around to the, I wanted to do something in the writing field, that was, because I knew that that was where I had any ability at all, that was it. I didn't want to teach.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to teach. I had some articles that I'd written in school journalism
mm-hmm.
classes. So I thought I would take those around and try to peddle them to the papers, see if they'd buy anything. So the Record, they liked this one article that I wrote about my nephew, the Munyu banker, you know, about a Munyu. You know, the full, you know, after babies are 1 month old,
mm-hmm.
1 month old banquet, you know, a Chinese custom.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my nephew had just had one, and I had written an article about that. How, you know, all the custom, about the custom, the red eggs,
mm-hmm.
all that business. So they thought that was, they liked it. And they,
Which paper this is?
The Record, the Los Angeles Record. It was the smallest paper. There were about six or seven papers in Los Angeles at that time, not just the way it is now, just two. A lot of competition, a lot of competing newspapers. But this was the smallest and the, I think, the feistiest and the most, you know, crusading newspaper it was. It was on 6th and Wall Street, a little old nook, little
mm-hmm.
old fire trap place, you know,
mm-hmm.
a small staff. But I went up there and they bought the article and published it on page one with a picture of my nephew in it. The picture was a really delightful picture, the little Chinese baby with a Chinese hat, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it made such a hit, I guess, that they offered me a job at $20 a week, which I thought was fabulous. I didn't have any idea of money at that point, because I'd never worked, I didn't know, and I thought that was a lot of money.
Did they offer you the job on the spot after seeing the
articles? Yeah, well, after that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I was very fortunate, really, in a way. It was just a fluke.
Were you paid what other reporters were paid, do you think?
Yes, we were all low paid on the Record. We were all ashamed to tell each other what we were making, but we found out after. Well,
like
some of them, we were. There were some, of course, been there much longer, but the young ones that first came on there. Like my job was really something. I learned everything I ever knew about newspaper work from the Record. I really owe them a lot, although I worked like hell. I'd have to go there in the morning by 7 o'clock in the morning and rewrite the LA Times and Examiner. Oh, they'd have a pile of clippings this high for me
mm-hmm.
to rewrite. And then they gave me a beat then after I'd been there about 2 or 3 weeks, or maybe a month. And during that time I just went on stories, different stories. And they gave me a beat downtown covering the Hall of Justice. And in the whole Hall of Justice, I had to start from the sheriff's station, going clear up to the Superior Court, including the DA's office, municipal courts, and all the other papers had a reporter for each one of those beats. They'd have one for the sheriff's station, one for the DA's office, one for the municipal courts, one for superior courts, but I was covering the whole thing besides the state and the federal buildings and the board of supervisors. So I was running from morning to night, you know, but I loved it. It was really good experience. I learned everything. Divorce courts, civil courts, all of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like someone told me,